Good evening, everyone. This is Influence Unplugged. I'm your host, Lindsay Watson. Tonight's episode is jam-packed with goodness. I'm so excited to introduce William Dimone Brown. To me, he's my business partner, my mentor, and I call him Papa, and he's also my friend. To you, you're going to know him as president and CEO of FIA Now Employment Solutions, CEO of Vision Builders, CEO of Secure Technology, CEO of 1130 Entertainment, and co-founder and CEO of Live Unique. Y'all, I know that sounds like a lot, but we are just scratching the surface. So let's get into it. Mr. Brown, welcome to tonight's episode.
Thank you, Lindsay. It's fun and a pleasure to be here. This is cool.
This is so cool. So now, just to kind of paint the picture for everyone, we've been working together for over 20 years.
Indeed. Yeah.
Right? We stopped counting at 20. It's probably closer to 25 at this point.
Is it? Yeah, I don't remember. I know we did your first album in 2004.
Yeah. So technically 20 years when we first started recording. We launched in 2005. So next year is the 20th anniversary. And that was when we first started working together formally, but we had been having some kind of work before. So,
yes.
So I think we stopped counting after the two decades, but that's a long time.
Yeah.
And there's so much to cover, and I hope we can cover as much as possible.
I'm here for it.
Tonight's episode is really about the world getting to know the who behind the what you do. So what I always like to start by asking, because we're here in the amazing Lehigh Valley, what brought you to the Lehigh Valley?
That's a good and interesting question. I remember, like, I was born and raised in the Bronx, and I wanted to get my family out of the hood or out of the street. Mm. And so when I got into the computer world back in, like, around 1996, and I started making really good money doing computer networks, I heard about the Poconos, and I moved up to the Poconos and bought my first home up there. And I was, for the first time, making the kind of money I had not made before. And I said, I don't want to just go crazy spending money. And so I said, I wanted to invest. So at that point, that's when I started investing in stocks and bonds. And then I heard somebody talking about real estate, looked up a course at the time. They didn't have, there was no YouTube, anything
right.
like that. So there was this Carlton Sheets. And I got this bunch of CDs and how to buy a house and looking to buy property, and somebody told me, you should come out to Allentown. Now, I didn't know at that point it was Lehigh Valley or
right.
what it was, but I just knew they had houses there, and you can get a house at a decent price. And I came out here and got a couple of homes, flipped them. One I kept and rented, which I still have to this day, which we have our office in.
Oh, yeah.
That's how I wound up here in Lehigh Valley then. So that's been since 2007.
Wow. So since 2007, so you're coming up on close to 20 years having had a presence here
yeah.
as an owner.
Yes.
So you started off as a real estate owner, but you also have several businesses that are headquartered here. What has been your driving factor to keep your businesses here?
Well, at the time it was course, but once I got here, I started to realize it was a kind of community that you won't find in New York. I started to meet people who were business owners. You got to remember, when I moved here, not moved here, but when I got my first property here, because I didn't move here, the Target on Airport Road, the
yeah.
only thing that was on Airport Road was the Waffle House. I don't think even Red Robin was there here,
oh,
if I can
wow.
remember. So, okay. So, yeah. So we started out. It was just, it made sense when I went to start the tech company, because I had other companies in New York and Pennsylvania. But when we started the tech company, I heard about Wall Street West. I don't know if you know about that.
Oh, please. No, remind me, and if you don't mind, share with everyone listening and what that was.
So they were thinking at that time that they wanted to have, because the computer boom was happening, the dot-com boom was like in fresh effect. And so they were thinking we needed to have a hub
yeah.
somewhere outside of New York City that we could set up this kind of Wall Street type of environment. And, of course, it never happened, but they were going to bring everything up here, and they were going to kind of set up networks and all this kind of stuff. So it just made sense that, you know, I had property here that if I'm going to do a tech company, it should be here.
Yeah.
And that's how that was born.
And I love it. And so you started with the tech company as your first business headquartered here.
Yes.
And now you've got a portfolio of businesses that you are either founder or co-founder of and or involved in.
Yes, ma'am.
So we're going to talk about your entrepreneurial journey, but I would be remiss to not talk about your experience and your life in the Bronx, including your involvement in the hip-hop movement and in music. Yeah, no, we're getting to all the goods. We're not going to miss a thing.
So this is interesting because I hear so many people try to tell a hip-hop story and how it started and where breakdancing came from and where the name came from. And people get up there and they figure they could say anything they want to say, but they weren't there, right?
But you were.
Absolutely, I was there. Yeah. I was going to the Kool Herc parties before rap was a thing, or even called rap, when we were in the basement in Cedric Avenue in this building, not the basement, but the rec room.
Yeah.
You know, I would ask him questions about DJ and find out about records. And there'd be times that he would like have to go use the little boys' room, and he would let me get on the turntables and play records.
Wow.
And so I fell in love with that aspect of music from that point. It was like, this is great. This is something I want to do. And then from there, what later became called breakdancing began there. But we just called them dance challenges back then. It wasn't the term break. Again, all of these terms weren't invented. We were just kids doing what we loved to do.
Love it.
And so we had these dance challenges, and I got into the dance challenges because it was fun, which became breakdancing. So let me just tell you why they call it breakdancing, because I've heard people say some stuff online that's absolutely not true. They say it was breakdancing because people would break out into a dance. It was called breakdancing because in hip-hop, we would take these old records and we would find them. They could be rock, they could be jazzy. And in the center of these records, sometimes you find this drum break. It was just out of nowhere. It could be strings and violins, and all of a sudden it goes into this funky beat, and then it goes back. And so literally, we would have to listen to hundreds of records that we would never even think of listening to. We would put out our father's and mother's old jazz records, where we could get them from.
Yeah.
And if we found that little drum break in there, we'll put that break on and we'll let it play, and we'll get two copies of it, and we'll go from one to the other and one to the other. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but the mixing the breaks cleanly from one to another, literally Grandmaster Flash created that.
Wow.
He actually created the system to do it, because he could take a soldering gun and he could flick where he can hear the record playing before the crowd can hear it. Back then when we did it, you couldn't. You just had to just mix it in and it wouldn't be on time or anything.
Wow.
But he came up with this system, the cue, where you can cue the record up and hear it. A lot of people don't know that. A little black kid from the Bronx came up with the cue, with the headphone cue, where you can slide it, and then the whole crossfader thing, and that's how it began. And so we would take the break beat of the record and we pull it in, and then we would go off on that part, and that's how it got the name breakdancing.
Oh my gosh, Lehigh Valley, we are hearing from the cut, literally, how this culture that so many of us have been influenced by and or are part of got started.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing. And I know there's so much more, but can we talk a little bit about your evolution in music and how you went from music to business? Because there's intersectionality that I think would be important for people to hear.
Oh, wow. That's a good story. Now, see, you don't have enough time, but let me just tell
you. Do what you can. Do what I can.
So... So, always wanted to be a musician from a kid. Yeah. Every kid, you know, poor kid in the hood. The only opportunity you had to be successful is basketball, which I stunk at sports. Even though I was 6'2", I was horrible at sports. Selling drugs or something, which, you know, or being a musician.
Mm. So three options.
Those would seem to be the options. Well, drug dealer or a number runner. I left out number runner. Well,
we're going way back. Okay, so four options. Military? Was military an option?
Not at the time, right? No, that wasn't something that they promoted. And you got to remember, I think, I don't know if Vietnam was still going on, but war was still going on. So nobody was rushing to try to join the military. You know, that wasn't
fair.
That wasn't a fun thing to even think
and
about.
Not in the hood.
And there wasn't incentives to join, like, college and all that stuff back then. So I remember begging my godparents, who I was living with at the time, for a drum set. And my godfather finally got tired of me begging, and he got me a drum set. And within, I think, about 4 to 5 months after getting that drum set, I was in a band. And I wasn't the greatest, but I could hold the beat.
Yeah.
And I wound up in the band. And from that phase of it, I started watching record production and how people made records. So going in the studio the first time and seeing how that worked, I got so excited. And so I said, okay, I want to learn more about that. So I kept bugging the engineer. I wouldn't leave the room. I kept asking a million questions. Mm-hmm. And so he started telling me how the mixer worked. And once I understood that the mixer board to anybody listening that they think it's so complex. There's so many knobs, so many buttons. How do you do it? It's one channel. It's one strip. Once you learn one strip, it's just a duplicate for each one, but it's the same thing. And I fell in love with mixing and the sound of it. So then I wanted to start figuring out how to make music.
Yeah.
But I started working with a popular manager who I won't name.
Yeah, we're going to skip all the names. There's some names in your history for sure.
In a very popular group. And I watched them coming in and out of the office begging for money. I watched them always lacking or struggling to get by. And I'm like saying, wait, I'll see you on TV.
Right.
You're in beautiful cars and mansions and stuff. You mean you guys are poor? You know, I couldn't understand these guys were begging for money to keep their phone on. And I said, well, wait a minute. So the managers and the executives and the producers have the money. Mm. Okay, I don't want to be an artist anymore. Oof. I want to be in the business side of it. So then I started hanging around the manager. Look, I don't want to be in a record. I want to know how to do what you guys do because you guys seem to be living the best life. And that's how I got in the music industry from the production side. You know, for me, being an artist looked fabulous on the outside.
Yeah.
But on the inside, I realized the people that ran the companies in the back end. Then you start to learn about royalties and all these kind of things. Me and you used to have these conversations back in the day.
Yeah.
You know, you doing all the work, you get 10% or 10 points on a dollar. And that's if they're generous, because really it's like 3 or 4 when you're starting out as an artist back in the day.
So before the paint dries and everyone's like, wow, he decided to go that route. Can we talk a little bit about your management style? Because once you got into managing artists, there were some pillars that you had from who you are and who your character is that really helped to change the scope of the artists that you manage as compared to other managers. I want to make sure everyone gets a chance to hear about that because it ties into your leadership style and who you are as a businessman now.
Okay. And you're included in that conversation.
Yes, sir.
Because you, when I created my label, you were my first artist, yes. Right? And I remember saying to you from the beginning, we're not going to go running around banging on everybody. This is before there was a YouTube and any of this was possible.
Yes. This was before social media. Right. We're talking 20 years. Right. So.
And I was saying to you, listen, we can go put the record out through them and we only get a little percentage, or we could put it out ourselves and do it ourselves and we'll make more money off of every record we sold.
Ownership.
I started talking ownership right away when that wasn't even popular.
Yeah.
Remember, we had a couple of meetings with a couple of people we won't name.
No names.
Who told us that we were crazy and we were out of our minds thinking that we can do it ourselves.
Yeah.
So to me, I just felt there were things about the way the artists that were treated that was totally wrong, and I still feel it to this day.
Mm.
There was no medical coverage. There was no insurance policy. There was no nothing on these people who were making millions and tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars for a record company, and then the next year your record doesn't sell, and then you're sick, and you can't even have the money to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
And I had seen that stuff too many times. Like, I can work a 9-to-5 and be treated better than, you know, you heard the TLC story, right? One of the biggest records in the world, and they were broke. And those stories used to bug me so bad. And I used to say, if I ever get in position, I'm going to change that. You know, there should be some kind of coverage. There should be some kind of pension. There should be something put aside from them. That hasn't happened yet to this day. But I think now that the kids are taking it into their own hands and having better control, you know, I'm not close on the industry like I used to be. But it's looking like that's coming to pass. But I always felt it wasn't fair that they made so much money for these companies, and at the end of the day, they wound up with almost nothing.
Yeah, that's so powerful. And I think one of the things I was hoping you jump in on, but I have to remember, you're so focused on leading that you don't often pause and say, hey, I've done this, and that. As a manager, what you've done is made sure that your artists were looked after. So it may not have been the health insurance yet, or the pension or the benefits yet, but it's protecting us, making sure that we get the right pay or that we get pay at all, right?
Right.
Making sure that you prioritize our mental health even before mental health was a discussion. And we talk a lot about transferable skill sets on this show, the evolution of how great community and business leaders that come to Influence Unplugged have taken what they've learned in life and use those skills for what they're doing now. And so there are some leadership pillars that I've come to know. And a lot of people in Lehigh Valley have come to know integrity for you, character matters.
Thank you.
doing business with people who have similar character and integrity, and making sure that everyone on a part of your team has opportunity for ownership. So I'd love to talk a little bit about that. We've got so many businesses you're a part of, but right now the hot, hot business is Vision Builders.
Well, before we go to that, you made a very powerful point here. And you've heard me say this a lot of times. Every deal is not a good deal.
Right.
If the person's personality or direction or desire doesn't align with who we are character-wise, we don't do that deal. Mm. And you and I are that way with Fia. Every deal is not a good deal.
Yeah.
And every situation is not a good situation. And we've gotten in situations that looked promising that we've later had to say, you know what, this is not a fit. And it doesn't matter what they're promising financially.
Right.
If it takes away our health, mental peace,
yeah,
you know, soundness of mind, you know, some things money just can't buy.
Yeah.
And after being on the planet as long as I have, you come to the realization that a lot of things we chase are fleeting. They're not real.
Mm.
So I've seen people, you know, as the Bible say, try to gain the world and lose their soul in the process.
Mm.
And that's not an after death thing. That's a while living thing. You lose your soul. You know, you lose your peace, you lose your happiness, you lose your joy, and you live in pursuit, but you never live in life.
Mm. Yeah, so this is the Mr. Brown I was hoping we could, you know, kind of tap into, because
there he is.
Having businesses, lots of people here have businesses, right? There he is. There he is. But it's really, it's the who behind the what.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about all of these years of experience, the music, the real estate, the tech, the entrepreneurship. Now you've got a platform, Vision Builders, where you're really getting a chance to put that all in. As you said, you've been around for decades. So this is a fresh start and a fresh opportunity to really use everything that you've learned over the years and all the things that you've done. Can you share with us a little bit about Vision Builders, what this platform is about, and how you think this will be beneficial to our community?
I love mentoring. I had been a pastor for years, and I would say to people all the time, I'm more of a mentor than I am a pastor.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't do church as usual. I didn't like, you know, some of the games that people play in church. I just like the opportunity to find young people that had dreams and ambitions and help them realize that. That's been always who I am. Now, here's something I say regularly, and it's true. When something comes easy for you, a lot of times you don't give it any value.
Mm.
You don't think that it's worth anything to anybody because it comes so simple for you.
Yeah.
So my gift and calling, I never gave value to it. It's just what I did. But at some point, I came to the realization that there were people who wanted to do more than just get up and do a 9-to-5. Or if they did a 9-to-5, do it in a way that they could grow and build their own, I guess, brand, legacy, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
And so I began, you know, which I started with you, even with your music career. And I said, okay, how do we turn this into some kind of community where we can talk to people? And we started it in the church,
yeah,
just as a fellowship in the church where we can meet and talk about business and business ideas and concepts with the members of the church. After I began to retire from that, we began to say, well, let's just, you know, just do it online, but still for the church. When I started Live Unique with Nelly, that's when I began to push her into social media, because she would do the videos where you just saw her hands and the people who she was styling. I was like, no, you got to get in front of the camera. And one day she came back after we became established and said, you need to get in front of the camera. And I was like, no, I don't think that's what I'm supposed to do. And yes, it is what you're supposed to do. So then I began to get in front of the camera with Vision Builders. Now, Vision Builders is this mentoring platform that we've created for young entrepreneurs, up-and-coming entrepreneurs. But I'm finding that a lot of older entrepreneurs are joining and wanting to have the conversation and saying, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, I didn't know that. And so this is the opportunity for me to share all the years of experience I've had,
yep,
with building companies, some succeeding, some failing, what I did wrong, what I've done right, and for people to join in that platform, and Builders, spelled B-U-I-L-D-A-Z, that platform for us is beginning to grow now. It's been not even a year yet since I've been in. But for me to even have social media platforms and be on social media,
yeah,
and having these conversations, it's been freeing for me, actually.
And how old are you, Mr. Brown?
65 now.
That's right. So anyone who's met Mr. Brown, you're like, what? Because he looks like he's maybe late 30s, early 40s. So
thank you.
Just we're painting a picture, right? We're just painting a picture for the audio. So thank you for sharing. That's visionbuildaz.com, right? Mm-hmm. Vision Builders, another Lehigh Valley-based organization. If you met a younger you.
Which I do a lot.
Which you do a lot.
I think you're a younger me.
Oh, well, thank you. That's a lot to look up to, but thank you. So if you met a younger you right now in this world and they said, I don't know what I want to do. I don't know how to get started, but I have a vision to just dream big. What's the most important piece of advice if you were to tap into your archives that you would want to give them if you had to pick one main thing?
That's a good one and an easy one for me.
Okay.
What's the thing that you would do for free that you dream about and you love and you probably already do it for free and you do it all the time without even getting paid for it?
What's the thing?
What is that thing? You everybody knows what that is. If I ask people if money wasn't the object.
Right.
What is it that you love to do and would do and do every day, even if you wouldn't get paid for it? And once they name it, I say, then that's the thing you should pursue.
Ooh, I love that. I love that. So we're hearing, what's the thing? If money weren't an issue at all and you could just wake up and do one thing, I'm sure it would be easy for people to be like, oh, I do this. It would be this. And it could be something completely unrelated
but
to
the
their
problem
job.
But the problem is, like I said earlier, but because that thing comes easy for them, they don't see value in it. But somewhere, somebody's paying money for it.
That's it.
Somewhere, somebody's paying money for it. People would make you feel bad or like you have no value if you're a musician. Mm. Yet you can't put on a movie without hearing music behind it.
Yeah.
You go in the restaurant, there's music playing. There's no such thing of an invaluable gift. It's valuable. But if you don't see it or you allow people to convince you that it's not valuable, then you're right. It's not.
That is amazing advice. And I'm hoping that we're taking notes as we're listening because you've had decades of experience having successes. And one of the things I love about you is you're very comfortable sharing the times where you weren't successful or yeah. where you had to learn. Can you talk about that mentality and that mindset with the little time we have left of how important it is to really own all the things, whether they go good or bad, and take ownership of them to help you grow?
Okay, so let me take you to a personal place. I spend a lot of my life coming from being an abused child, ran away from home at 12 years old, never went back, wound up in the system, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Trying to get no Kleenex out. But here's the point. Hmm. So you grow up without a value. Hmm. And a lot of us, especially from your own family, you know, prophet is not without honor except in his own home. You grow up not being recognized for your gift. A lot of times being told, will you be quiet if you talk too much? Mm. Why you always got something to say? Why? So you've always almost grow up despising the gift that you were given to be successful because people who don't have your gift speak against your gift. Now, with that said, you do a lot of things from that point in your life to get people's approval and love. You're not really exploring your gift and being the best you can be with your gift. You're trying to get somebody to pat you on the shoulder and finally say, well done. And when it doesn't come, you don't explore the gift to its fullest. Mm. So, yeah, and this is, you ask this question, the real question. So to be able to give to somebody something that I don't yet have or embrace is pretty hard. So you can't live your life trying to please others. And, you know, you get older and you come to that realization. But I try to get young people to grab it quick. And I don't mean that attitude. I don't care what anybody says. F everybody. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that the attitude of I'm good with me, even if you don't like me. And I used to say this back in the day. I want you to like me. I'm not going to lie. I want you to love me. I want you to appreciate me. But if you don't, I'll survive. Mm-hmm. I'll be all right. I'll be good. If we can grab that as young as possible, then we can take the no's to get to the yes. And there's a saying, and I'm getting ready to shoot a video on this, but it's something that I thought about. If I said to you right now, Lindsay, you're going to be a billionaire, but you're going to go after you have to take at least 250 no's to get there. How quick would you get moving to get those no's out the way?
Get them just right out of
the
way.
Just head them down, right? See, tomorrow you'll be trying to get your first 50 no's. But because that's not a mindset, We see no's as pain, and no's put us in neutral mode, and we stop going. But if we look at no's as the road to our ultimate yes, that's the key. I tell people all the time, hard work is not the key to success. Hard work is preparation. Success is one opportunity.
Mr. Brown, thank you so much. It can be hard sometimes to get everything you've experienced like in, but you did a fantastic job.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you, thank you. And I think there's something for everyone, all ages, all backgrounds. And so we just appreciate you taking the time to come in and share your wisdom and knowledge. Once again, everyone, this is Influence Unplugged. I am your host, Lindsay Watson. And tonight we have the honor of interviewing William Dimon Brown.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Pleasure. Proud of you, Lindsay.
Thank you very much. All right. We'll see you next time.